My name's Adele Onyango, and welcome to another episode of Legally Clueless. No, seriously, I have no clue what I'm doing, but I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one. Hey you, welcome to episode 217 of Legally Clueless. Thank you so much for rocking with the podcast. If you are an OG member, I truly appreciate you. Thank you for being part of the fam. And if this is your first time listening to the podcast, welcome. Audio episodes like this go out every single Monday, and you can stream them on Spotify and everywhere else you find podcasts on. Head over to legallycluelessafrica.com to officially join the fam by signing up to be part of our community. And while you're there, you can watch our tour series, our video series. We've really done a lot of dope stuff. So go and check them out. Ooh, and I've started forgetting about our Insta page. Join us on Instagram. We're at Legally Clueless Africa. Links to all of the pages I've told you about, from our website to our Instagram, are in our show notes. And what you can also find there, in case you want to share your story on this podcast, is a storyteller form. Fill it out and we'll get back to you. I'm really excited about this episode because you're going to listen to part two of Noella's story. We decided to start May with her story because May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and her story, you know, we weave through a manic episode that happens when she's so far away from home. She gets hospitalized and then gets diagnosed with bipolar. Yeah, so part two of her story is coming up. Listen to this.
Unfortunately, even when I came back home, I did not know my diagnosis. They did full body checks. So I was like, okay, everything else is fine, but you have unspecified bipolar. And that didn't mean anything to me because I did not know what that was. The information, you have bipolar and it's actually a mental illness. We didn't know that. So even me coming back home to Kenya, like my flight, like my family was like, Kai Aki God, please hold her safe. Because at some point I have to take my medication. I'm in the flight. They were like, can you tell the flight attendant, you need to take your medication at a certain time. Like, if I take this medication and then I sleep, what will happen? Someone will grab my stuff. Even I didn't sleep. I didn't take my medication. I didn't sleep. I was like, let me wait until I get into the plane, which is a bit safer.
That's Noella. In a bit, we get to that part of her story. And, ooh, song of the week. I really like this artist. I actually really dig her. I feel like she's very committed to her art. It's very raw. There's just something that draws me to her music. I think I've shared a song by her before. Why is the name of the song escaping me? Anyway, her name is Eniko, and she has a relatively new song out called Jericho, and I really love it. I really do. Please check it out. I've put a link to it in the show notes. Oh, speaking of the song, I don't know if I shared this in a previous episode, but I finally bought my drum kit. I'm so excited and so happy, and just like, you know what's blowing my mind? That I have been able to curate the exact life I've always wanted. And why this is blowing my mind is, as a recovering people pleaser, I think I'd gotten to a point where I just thought certain things are not normal and just will never be a reality for me. If you are maybe not only creatively inclined, but if you're the type of person maybe in your family or in your social space, the path you've taken isn't the path many take, isn't the quote-unquote norm, you start to move away from your path subconsciously, right? And you kind of start thinking that that path you wanted to take, with all the things that seemed like your desires seemed so possible, you start to think that that's wild, that's madness, it can never happen. But it can, it really can. And every morning I wake up to like the birds chirping, I go for a walk before I start my work. Now that I have the drum kit, I drum from about 8 to 8:30 every morning. Then I have like avocados for breakfast. Like, it's just, it's exactly the poetic, very creative, very nature driven and surrounded life. Like yesterday, I was harvesting skooma, spinach. Skooma is what? Kale, spinach, cabbage, some avocados, carrots. Like, and that's, I don't know if you had that sound, but there's two birds at my window right now that have been dancing here all afternoon trying to come in. It's life. It's straight out of a storybook. And the sweetest part is that I have curated it for myself. So I don't know if you can connect with that. It's very possible. But back to the drums, okay? I always wanted to learn how to play the drums. 10 years ago, I remember being, it's not 10 years. My goodness, it's like 14 years. 14 years ago, I was at this open mic poetry gig with my friend Nyags. And I told her, you know, I always wanted to learn how to play the drums. I think there was a band playing and I was just like, ooh, I just love the drums, something about it. And she was like, oh, you need to meet my friend Andrew. He'd be the best guy to teach you. And he happened to be at the same gig. And we spoke then and I was like, yeah, you're going to teach me how to play the drums. And then I went silent for 10 years. Actually, I think I went silent for longer. It took me 12 years to reach out to Andrew. But in that time, I was on radio, etc. But when I left radio in 2019, what I think happened is resigning from my job brought me back home to myself. Like, this was something I was so scared of doing, resigning. But when I did this thing that I feared so deeply, and not only did I survive, but I built things that were thriving, in my head, I was like, what else? What else can't I do? It really brought me back to myself. And I started going to the vaults, like the inner vaults, to remember what else did I always want to do. I always wanted to go on tour. That was one of the reasons I quit radio. And I was like, it's possible. Did it. I live in a place called Limuru. Always wanted to live here. And for the longest time, I used to take drives around Limuru and just be like, man, I wonder what it takes to live here. I did it. And learning to play the drums was on that list as well. So 2021, I reached out to Andrew. I'm like, let's do it. Start a couple of classes. Then life happens and I need to recenter myself, etc. But now I got back to it. And God bless Andrew. Like, I feel like he really sees me as a drum teacher, but also as a friend. He's like not pushy, very patient, going at my pace, like just the best teacher, you know? And I genuinely think in hindsight, and it just hit me properly today, that quitting just reminded me how invincible I am, like how valid all of my desires and all of my dreams are and how capable I am of achieving them. And so I don't know what right now in this moment you're so scared of doing, but not only can you do it, but the version of you that exists on the other side, once you've done it, is like the most you you'll ever be. And you will have been reminded of how powerful you are, how capable you are. And I don't know, I feel like that should motivate us to not let fear keep us away from doing certain things. You know, as I'm playing the drums, first I experienced such joy. But one of the things that it's made me really aware of is it's very important to stay curious, to always be ready to learn. I think we very quickly settle into our routines. We settle into our scope of knowledge and just like reside within it, not venture outside of it. And especially for me in business, I have to always remember that I am not all-knowing. When you get comfortable, things pass you by, especially in this tech innovative world. You have to stay on your toes and you have to keep adapting. And also as a small business, you have to keep reading about what are these new tools that can help your business run efficiently. And I've also found that if you lock yourself and refuse to be curious, let's say when you started your business, you thought path A is the one and only way and path D is wrong. I've realized that down the road, you might find path D actually works for you. By remaining curious, you remain open and malleable to the changes in environment, especially when it comes to business. But I guess it's not just only business, but also on a personal note, learning something new and remaining curious helps you ensure that your mind stays open to learning and to unlearning. When you're always asking why, asking how does this work, when you're always curious about people in industries different from yours, cultures that are different from yours, you not only learn, but you shed off the stubbornness and the being rigid that stops us from unlearning. Yeah, I just feel like it is very important to keep learning and to stay curious. Man, the joy I feel on the drums is weird. Like, it's so pure. It's so pure. Like, I can bottle it. I don't think I felt it. It's a new kind of joy. I don't know. And it's not an excitement. The first days, obviously, like when I was got it, delivered, setting it up, there was excitement. But when I'm playing it and I have my headphones on, I've never felt such pure joy before. And like the other day, my partner sent me an a cappella version of the song of the week, Jericho. And he was like, this might help you with your practice sessions. And I was able to freestyle a groove to it, which was so wild to me, just like opened more curiosity. And I was now listening to music that day like, oh, I can hear the drum, I can hear the groove, maybe this one I can try, etc. Anyway, what I just wanted to share in this episode is, yeah, stay curious, always ask why, how things work. And remember, you can learn anything under the sun. The only thing that is needed is for your mind to be absolutely open to it. Just always be humble enough to know that you are not all-knowing. And that is beautiful because there's so much, so much to learn. So let's jump into 100 African stories. As I said last week, I first met Noella at one of our Legally Clueless Africa digital content workshops. And then I watched her film. I've put a link to the film in the show notes, by the way. You should check it out, What's Eating My Mind. And it's probably one of the most apt, honest, raw, very intentional pieces of art, because that's what film is, on mental health and mental illnesses that makes you not only see the cracks from like a policy point, but more from a people, from a culture, and even asks of you to introspect and ask yourself, like, how am I contributing to kind of like the mess we've created around this? So here's part two of her story. If you have not listened to part one, it's going to be a bit strange. I'd urge you to go to last week's episode and listen to part one and then come back and listen to this one.
100 African stories on Legally Clueless. Stories from Africa.
So unfortunately, they were not telling me why I need it. And because I was very resistant, like on the lithium, they were trying to see ways in which they can have it like in my system, maybe through an injection. They were also talking to my family back in Kenya, like my dad and my brother, who I follow, who at the time was in Australia, trying to talk to them to convince me that it's an important, like I need it. Yeah. But unfortunately, even when I came back home, I did not know my diagnosis. So it was like they did full body checks. So I was like, okay, everything else is fine, but you have unspecified bipolar. And that didn't mean anything to me because I did not know what that was. And then coming back home in Kenya, it was luckily my dad, you know, my dad, niwala kubai gazeti. So this was I was diagnosed in 2016. And then early 2017, I came back home to Kenya. And then at the time my dad had seen like a newspaper. There was a story that someone had shared. And part of her story was that she was bipolar. So there were similarities to her story and mine. So it was like trying to find who she is. Can we talk to her? And it was like, hey, I found someone I can cling on to. So I remember calling her, she's called Mary, and then being like, hey, I think I was also misdiagnosed. I can't understand what's happening. So I feel like because I told her so many things, she was like, I feel like you first need to see like a counselor to help you unpack these things. Because I feel like a lot of what my family and I were struggling with is like not knowing, like the information you have bipolar, and it's actually a mental illness. We didn't know that. So even me coming back home to Kenya, like my flight, like my family was like, Kai Aki God, please hold her safe. Because at some point I have to take my medication. I'm in the flight. They were like, can you tell the flight attendant that you need to take your medication at a certain time? It was very scary for them. But for me, because I don't know what it is, I just know there are so many weird changes. I'm like, I was even calculating like on my layover, because I had a long layover in Amsterdam. Like, if I take this medication and then I sleep, what will happen? Someone will grab my stuff. So I was like, no, let me hold on to, even I didn't sleep. I didn't take my medication. I didn't sleep. I was like, let me wait until I get into the plane, which is a bit safer, and then I can do it. You know, it was like making decisions like that, but it's because of listening to my body. When Mary gives me the contact, or she gives me, actually gives me a contact of a counselor here in Kenya. And then I call, I'm like, oh, hi, I need, I was given your number by Mary, and I think I have this thing. I'm not sure what it is. So she's like, yeah, come with all your medical reports and everything. Because I had a lot, and I would carry them everywhere. And I remember that day, I went with my dad and we passed through town because he was like, we need to make copies of this because, you know, we actually need something. Yeah, so we go there. She has a look. The counselor has a look at the papers, and then she's like, so what you've been told is true. She seems to have unspecified bipolar. I have no idea. And you think that it would be easy at that time to find information. So even I remember Googling and being like, unspecified bipolar, like what was coming up on medical reports. I can't translate that. So she's like, yeah, so it actually means that you have a mental illness. Like I didn't even feel like, what? It was like, okay, finally we know what it is. It was like, my experience was very different in the sense that I wasn't like, guy, now this is what I have. It was like, okay, now we have a diagnosis. So at least we have that. So how then can we move forward? So she was like, you will need to come and see the doctor. Today is not the day that the doctor comes. And then having regular sessions. So we're like, okay, fine. You know, it's that one, like when you get someone, it's like you cling to them because that's like your lifeline. And that was in Kamili. It's on Lua Kabete. It's in Lua Kabete. And so we made a follow-up visit with the doctor. Yeah, and it was like, I remember the counselor also saying that, this is a lifelong journey and you have to be easy on yourself, but take a day at a time as well, which I feel was very good information because I had come from a point of not knowing a lot of things to suddenly something coming, like news coming in that you have no idea where this stems from. And like at that point, I was like, I have to do a story. I have to do a story about this. I have no idea how I'm gonna do it, but I'm gonna do it. It was more of, there's a gap here, especially because, okay, now I have a doctor, I have a counselor, and then the counselor is like, oh, you need to be part of a support group. And then when I go to this support group, I'm like, people from all ages, all back, I'm like, hey, so like I feel like at every point it was like a realization of something. Every point was like it was revealing something. And then you hear other people's stories, you're like, well, at least mine is not as mad as what this person say, you know. But it's like you can see like how people are struggling with how, for example, the family dynamics, how society perceives them. I'm like, there's a story here. I'm not quite sure how to do it, but I feel like there's something here. And for me, it started with filming my support group, but it had to take some time because it's also gaining their trust. Being like, you guys, I have background in film or like, you know, but also to record two easy sessions there too. And then also even when I was in the US, I was filming as part of school projects. So I had, like, I'd already started filming bits and pieces here and there. And then it was also, okay, anyone who would give me an opportunity in terms of, do you want to advocate for mental health? So I also luckily was able to get a fellowship to go back to the US in 2019 for a fellowship on storytelling. And, you know, like that was one of the ways in which I was like, okay, speaking about my experiences, but also other people. For me, particularly, it was other people who were having it worse than me, especially those who didn't get support from their families. Yeah, so my U.S. fellowship was on using storytelling as an advocacy tool. And it was about training people who have lived experience to be able to advocate for themselves. So it was training them the basics of how you can use your phone to be like, speak about the things that you want. Like you feel like there's a gap specifically to your need. Going back to the U.S. in 2019, I think it was spring 2019. At that point, I was already like used to my medication. I knew like my body a bit better, but there was that. Yeah, as you should. But I feel it's also my sense of curiosity that's like. And at that time, I was so passionate. I was like, yeah, we can even use different art forms to talk about mental health. And I remember the panel of guys who were like, who are taking us through the selection process. At some point, they were so quiet, just listening to me. They're like, you know, this thing has a lot of people are going through this thing, but we don't know how to do it. I was like, yeah, we can even empower media houses. We can empower like, families. Like there was a need. And luckily I was selected for the program. But I remember, like, during that process, I'm not sure whether I told my family or not, or I just sprang and told them, oh, hey, I'm going to the U.S. But it was definitely, there was definitely a moment of, is this the right decision? When I get to do the U.S. fellowship on storytelling, coincidentally, at the same time, there was a call out for African filmmakers who just have an idea about migration. And I wasn't too sure about mine, but I was like, yeah, I have an element of migration. I went to the U.S. I became sick there, and now I'm back home and I'm trying to empower people within my support group. So maybe that can be something that I can pitch. And luckily, I knew someone who was an alumni of the program, and because this program was focusing specifically on disabilities, and mental health is a psychosocial disability. So I pitched it, and then so this other program that was looking for original ideas from Africa was looking to empower African storytellers. And when I pitched the idea, it got selected. So we went through the different stages of story development. We had workshops both in Nairobi and in Ghana. And when they finally narrowed down to the films that they want to produce, it was like, okay, now I need a producer. I need like a team to work on this story. But I feel like even like the U.S. fellowship was part of my research. I felt like being part of a support group was part of my research because it helped me understand the dynamics that were there. And then also within the support group, we got opportunities to be part of trainings about policies in the mental health space. So I was, at the time, I'd already like done a lot of groundwork on it and was able to articulate some of the gaps that were there. And then that led me to working with LBX Africa and STEPS, which originally did the call out for stories on migration. And that's how What's It In My Mind started, like the journey of making the film. The name of the film is What's It In My Mind. So I chose that title specifically because I wanted to take people on this journey of me finding out what's happening with me. Because like I said, every stage, like I'm learning something new about even how I got to know about my diagnosis, knowing, oh, support groups are there, knowing that you can fit the story as part of a migration story. So it was like taking you through this process, but particularly it was like helping the audience understand that, listen, I have this thing. I'm not too sure what it is, but I want you to bring you into my world. So it's the title, What's It In My Mind, is a journey through my experience with the lived experience with bipolar. I feel like it was affirmation from a lot of people. I remember when the film was released on YouTube, I was very nervous about it, especially because of how vulnerable I had to be while telling the story. But in the same breath, it was also about people saying, finally, like, yeah, this is what I go through. And you know, it was a famine because it was like, I know I'm not the only one going through this. And if it's just, and for me, even making the film, even when it was really hard, because we really had hard moments when making the film, it was like, even if it just reaches one family, just one, I don't even want actually many, just one family, that will be enough for me. Okay, so in Africa, we have African traditional norms, which in as much as we feel like we're progressive, they still run till today. And there's this misconception that, let's take you to a witch doctor. He has a solution, because for the longest times as Africans, when dealing with mental illness, we did it with our own local resources. And the witch doctor was the first point of contact. And even till today, we have a lot of families who reach out for that as an option. And also the issue of praying away the condition, which, hey man, as Africans, the church has, I don't know whether it's brainwashing, but it's like, let's pray for you. Let's pray away the condition. Prayer has its place. But even in the film, I say like, yeah, my family prays for me, which is great, but you need to know to do a lot more than that. It's like, yes, it's even in there's a saying that says faith without works is dead. So it's not a one size fits all. You need to do a lot of to even accept your condition, to live through it. You know, being part of a support group is one great way that you can find a community. And I feel like a lot of people who are experiencing them in solitude, it's because of the stigma that comes with it. But finding resources that can help you live through it, because if you have it, you have it. And unfortunately, a lot of people who get diagnosed with mental illness are in denial, which helps heighten the problem because people don't know how to help you. For me, I feel like the film was a saving grace for me because it helped me understand myself a lot more. I know my triggers. I know I can, even after a relapse, I can trace back to, okay, this might have been the reason why I have it. I got a relapse, for example. And but not everyone is able to do that, unfortunately, especially because mental illness is an invisible illness. Actually, medication for me has been a journey from the extremes where, like, I got that I was told that they need to inject lithium on me, to now, you know, having side effects with medication. Some of it has been like weight gain, for example. Of course, no lady would want to gain weight because of medication. And also, it's like, sometimes it's also good for you to articulate, like, if the medication has side effects that you're not comfortable with, to the doctor. Right now, I'm still on medication, and like a day for me is I take my meds both in the morning and at night, but the dosage has reduced because I'm able to cope and I'm able to articulate, hey, this one, the one that you gave me last time, yes, I tried it, but like XYZ is not working for me. But not everyone is able to do that because sometimes it's like, they will be like how I was before. It's too strong for me. So they're like, they don't take it at all. So, and I feel like that also comes with, how do you communicate with your doctor? But are they also listening to you? Because a lot of times people complain that, yeah, I've told them over and over again, but they insist that I need to take this one. And because you don't know the technical terms, you don't know what functions this specific medication has, you're like, me, I just know how it's making me feel, and I don't want to feel like that. Even when, like, I see it a lot, like when, for example, you go to hospital, or like when, for example, you go to hospital, and then I'm the one who's taking the medication, I'm the one who's experiencing it, but they're like, so, as a caregiver, what do you think is the problem with this person? And yet, I'm still the same person who will speak to my caregiver and be like, this is something that's not right. I mean, I feel like even, like, when making this film, For me, one of the things that I was keen about was representation. Listen to me and what it means for me to take medication, what it means for me to struggle to get out of bed, what it means for me to have this illness, and like having a realization that, hey, it's a mental illness. So, I mean, that is heavy. Like having a voice to the person who's actually going through it. And I believe that people with lived experience with mental illness are experts and can take this, how we approach it, the medication, to a different level if you just listen to them. To someone who's going through a mental illness, whether diagnosed or not, I'd say that listen to your body. You, like, as an individual, you're intuitive and your body speaks to you. If you need to reach out for help, please reach out to help. We do have a resource toolkit in the form of our website. It's the title of the film, whatsitinmymind.com. It can link you, it can be like your first point of reference. You can read on it, you can look at different emergency numbers that you can call, but seek help first. And then because everyone for some reason has an opinion about you and what it is that you're experiencing, find a support group. Because a support group will open you up to other people's experiences. And I feel like support groups or people who are going through what you're going through may not necessarily understand you, like your family, because they're not in your shoes. And they bring such a relief of knowing that you're not alone.
Catch more African stories in the next episode of Legally Clueless.
How absolutely powerful is Noella's story? My goodness, the work she's doing is so necessary. Please check out the show notes. There's a link to her film. It's on the BBC Africa YouTube page. It's called What's Eating My Mind. Check out the resource that she shares, which I think is so amazing. Also linked that in the show notes. It is loaded with tons of resources. Like, it's just from if you're in a crisis, they have emergency and hotline numbers there. They have a list of healthcare centers in case your question is, where do I access mental health care in Kenya? They have resources on insurance covers, so which insurance cover actually includes mental health care. They have resources in terms of access to counseling centers, in terms of research on mental health, stories from mental health survivors. I just think, let me finish one thought fast. I just think it's an important site that you should go to. And secondly, it's great to have resources that are localized. So right now it's Kenya, but who knows? They might stretch across the continent. I think it's about time that we start having such resources for ourselves as Africans. So check it out. A link to it is in the show notes, or you can just go to whatseatingmymind.com. All right, remember that you can join our community just by going to legallycluelessafrica.com and sign up. You can also catch Legally Clueless on Trace FM. If you're here in Kenya, just go to traceradio.co.ke. We are there on Mondays and Wednesdays at 1 p.m. and 11 p.m., Fridays at 1 p.m. So I'm going to end this episode here, but you know, Kamakawa, the way I'm always saying, I'm leaving you, I'm wishing you grace. What else do I normally wish you? Kindness and love. But I know grace is always there because, my goodness, this is important. Important ingredient in this life thing. But in addition to that, I just want to reiterate, please stay curious. Please keep learning. And even most importantly, keep unlearning.
That's it for this episode of Legally Clueless. You can share this podcast with your friends. You can keep it for yourself. I'm not judging. Just make sure you're here next week for the next episode.